Uncle Data here, and this is the first and opening podcast episode of Uncle Data. In this opening episode, I'm going to cover two topics. So one is going to be a couple Python libraries which are written or being written in Rust, and of course the upcoming PyCon event in Vilnius that will happen on May 17th to 20th. So actually, maybe I'm a bit too late to this whole, you know, hype train about Rust, but I don't know. Let's see how it goes, you know, and maybe, you know, you'll take something out of it. So Rust in general first appeared in 2015, and it's actually, you know, blazingly fast, you know, super memory efficient, and it doesn't have runtime or garbage collector, and can actually power anything performance critical, right? So, and run on embedded devices, and it's actually easily can integrate with other languages. So one of the reasons, you know, why I'm talking and why I mentioned, I'm going to mention, you know, so some of the libraries which are written or going to be rewritten in Rust, but going to be wrappers around Python, and that somehow a bit sentence a bit with the tone earlier, but anyway, nonetheless. So it's a quite powerful language, right? And it's super fast, and it should at some point become a standard. But I'm talking here more, you know, from the data engineering perspective, or like, you know, from data area itself. But before, you know, I'm gonna talk about this, you know, I'm gonna give you a fun fact that Rust stations are basically, you know, the people, you know, code in Rust, and actually why their logo is kind of a crab in some situations, it's because it comes from a word crustacean, which actually, you know, is like a group of species. And when I'm talking about, you know, the crabs and these things, so this is the neat little book I got as a friend lended to me, because when I saw, you know, a lot of in community, you know, making noise about Rust. So I knew that he had it, you know, in his frustration himself. So I had to actually, you know, get it. But somehow I'm not managing, you know, my time very well. And it's just basically for now just collecting the dust. But I guess, you know, for some people it sits and collects dust like myself, right? But for some other, as you know, you can see in data community, you know, that they're actually doing some things, you know, they're trying out, you know, doing some comparisons, you know, I've seen, you know, some Spark-like data frame manipulations, which were like initially, like the library was built in Rust, and the person did, you know, some computational, you know, performance benchmarking, you know, compared to Spark. So that's actually, you know, quite interesting, you know, to see, you know, that it's already got some traction there, right? And let's see how it will turn out, right? If you're, you know, if you're looking, you know, in general on those libraries, so one of those libraries which are written in Rust with Arrow right beside, heavily using it. Like before I give introduction of, so everyone knows Pandas, right? No one is, I assume, you know, you're not living under the rock, you know, and you know what Polars is. So apart from being, you know, a different kind of bear, you know, we have pandas, we have koalas, you know, now we have Polars. Let's see, maybe there's going to be a grizzly bear later, or grizzly, or most likely it is, just I'm not aware. Anyway, so Polars is a very neat little, will not call it little, a very neat and powerful library, which, like I mentioned, is written in Rust and utilizes Arrow, and it allows, you know, data frame interface. So how I see it, you know, it's like pandas on steroids, or in this case, based on speed, you know, and performance, I guess it's maybe pandas on super soldier serum. Not sure how many Marvel fans, you know, are listening. So, get the reference. If not, you know, you can Google, you know, what's the super soldier serum. But the thing is that actually, you know, the library itself is not new. So like I mentioned, the friend from whom I borrowed this book, you know, he's like crazy into Rust, and So I remember, you know, when I first saw it, I just sent him, you know, a link, you know, and said like, oh, damn, you know, Rust is already, you know, breaking into data science and analytics. And I checked the message, and it's actually dated, you know, 2021, May 10th. So roughly almost 2 years ago, right? So like there were some thoughts in my head, right? So why did it take, you know, around 2 years, you know, for the library in general to get traction, right? So most likely, you know, at that point, you know, it wasn't that maybe feature rich, right, to push it. Maybe Rust, you know, wasn't picking up a lot of attention, you know, from data community, and like maybe some other, I don't know, reasons why. But you know, it's there now, and it's actually, you know, a very powerful thing, you know, what can you know, help us analyze, you know, bigger than, you know, fits to memory use cases. So in general, if we would look, you know, on the what we have, you know, in the pollers GitHub, right? So for me, it's actually interesting, you know. Yeah, you can see, you know, similar things, you know, like Spark, lazy eager executions, multi-threaded, query optimization. So a lot of things, you know, and a lot of similarities with Spark. If we would see, you know, the syntax and how it runs, right? Yeah, data frame creation kind of resembles, you know, pandas, but if you look, you know, as how it's executed, you know, what's happening there. Spark, call filter lit, you know, so I guess, you know, there's a lot of inspiration from Spark in general, but shifted, you know, on Rust, which actually will be a bit more, I guess, performance enhanced maybe approach instead of, you know, JVM approach. One of the reasons why I actually, you know, like Spark is that it's quite flexible, you know, and allows, you know, to write SQL expressions, you know, with a little bit of manipulation. So similarly, you know, Polars does the same. And yeah, there are a lot of, you know, benchmarks that are actually, you know, quite popular, you know, in data community. Oh, I'm benchmarking this on that, you know, I can see, you know, that there are like a lot of places where it runs fast, right? Even in being lightweight, you know, on importing things. So I think it's gonna be, you know, interesting how it will evolve. And a small teaser, you know, what I'm gonna mention a bit later is how maybe what's planned for the polars, you know, in the near future. Now let's take a look, you know, about other interesting language. And it's actually, you know, like I found that library when we were hiring, you know, for a data engineer, and we actually sent out, you know, a task, you know, like a general data engineering part, right? You extract some data from some place, right? And you just, you know, do some manipulations, you know, validations, and push, you know, to the data warehouse, you know, well, in the end. And actually, you know, like I was reviewing, you know, one candidate's code, and I'm like, what's this Pydantic? Like with base models and whatnot, like, what's happening? Like first time I'm seeing, you know, and just like, you know, like verified, you know, how it's used, you know, what's happening in the code and so on. It's like, oh, that's nice. Then I researched, you know, the whole library, and it's like, oh, purely Pythonic, you know, used in, and it allows, you know, data validations, you know, and enforce type hints, you know, and it's like user-friendly errors and so on. So if you have been following, you know, the data fuzz, like the fuzz that was created, you know, by data community some time ago, you would know, you know, that actually Pydantic is gonna have a v2 version released, and it's gonna be rewritten in Rust. So basically, you know, the whole rewrite, you know, of this library is gonna happen in Rust. And in general, why I like I'm super interested, you know, how this is gonna evolve, is that it's quite heavily, you know, adopted, you know, in general in development, you know, a lot of like libraries are using it, right? So Fast API, you know, if I'm not mistaken, is using, you know, and basically if you're creating, you know, APIs in general, right, it's super neat for you, you know, to validate it. So even though, you know, like always, you know, people are trying to see, you know, how it's gonna work out, if nothing will break, you know, after a major upgrade and so on, you know, but gonna be interesting, you know, how it will affect the speed, you know, like all of the things related, you know, to the performance, you know, and later on, you know, the adoption of the community, way different approach, right? Because previously it was Python based, so contributions, you know, to open sourced repository, you know, is way going to be narrowed down just because, you know, like there are less people, you know, who can write code in Rust, right? But let's see how it goes. Another library which appeared in my radar, like I think a couple months back, somewhere there, you know, it's called Ruff. And what I actually liked, you know, that, you know, Ruff in general is like a linter. So now, you know, linters are quite useful, right? Because what's important for people? So linter, you know, fixes, like outlines, you know, all the issues, you know, in your code, like it doesn't follow standards and so on. But it's basically, you know, part of like whole development process, right? You have, you know, your test suits on CI/CD, you know, you have, you know, formatting in black, you know, and like then linting comes up, right? And if those things take time, right? And you're, you know, you're like, you're evolving your code, you know, adding new things, you know, couple, you know, like pull requests, you know, a day or whatnot. It actually later on, you know, waiting on these things is gonna consume like overall, you know, like quite long period of time, right? So, you know, you can control, you know, on test suits, you know, you can like the black is quite efficient, you know, but on the linting part, right, it's not that fast. And the thing is that, you know, actually why I think, you know, it's going to be next big thing, Ruff as well, right, is that it's actually, you know, at from 10 to 100 times faster, you know, than the existing linters. So why not, right? If it already, you know, covers the job, you know, and can almost like replace existing Flake 8, you know, and other dozen, you know, like whatever plugins, you know, all these things, you know, like for me, personally, it's already like a win-win situation, right? I can already see, you know, that it's used in like major open source projects, right? Apache Airflow, Fast API, Hugging Face, Pandas, SciPy. And why they did that? Of course, the development experience, you know, for people. And you don't have to, you know, wait and just, you know, bash your head, you know, oh, if it's going to run smoothly or not, right? So I would say, you know, those are three big libraries, you know, which are going to be the three musketeers at the start, right? Who are more like more widely, you know, adopted in the data community, and I guess more will follow. Let's see how it will shape up, you know, and how it will turn out, you know, in the end here. But right, I mentioned, you know, I'm going to talk about PyCon, you know, so why I'm promoting, you know, this event now, and why I'm actually, you know, in general, you know, doing this, right? So I'm going to give you, you know, a bit of a brief brief introduction. You know, so you might have seen, you know, if you're following me on LinkedIn, that I made a post, you know, that like my speech was accepted, you know, into PyCon 2023. And this was one of my, you know, main goals, you know, like, before I get to age 45, you know, want to do, you know, public speaking, you know, or like, you know, presentation, you know, in a conference, you know, and actually, you know, since I know that my stronger suit, you know, at least at this point, you know, or like when I was creating, you know, that goal, was technical. When I raised those goals, actually, you know, what was, I knew like very little, you know, Python and whatnot. It was like, I think when I was 27, you know, something like that. So I had like, you know, like bare bones knowledge, you know, of like Python, you know, usual things on data warehousing and whatnot. So I didn't knew much, you know, about a lot of open source tooling, you know, and so on. And looking back, you know, like I got my experience, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, doing Apache Spark things, you know, then we like at Quix, you know, we had introduction of Apache Airflow, you know, and basically then I'm like, oh, damn, that's nice, right? So I spent a lot of time, you know, checking multiple things in those libraries, you know, on Apache Spark. I did a lot of fine tuning, you know, like even doing, you know, some workshops, you know, just to get, you know, people up to basic speed, you know, of how to use, you know, how to run it and whatnot. And those two, you know, open source projects kind of followed me, you know, along the way in different companies. But with Apache Spark, you know, I think my last, like to some extent, known version was 3.1, and I saw that they're releasing, you know, 3.4. They released it already. So three versions, at least three versions behind, right? And it doesn't make sense. And since I'm heavily relying on Airflow, it's one of the strongest suits, but not on like, you know, like the internals, you know, adding, you know, committing to open source and so on. It's more like, you know, from the development side and from the usage as a, you know, as a data engineer, not from the infrastructure. So now how is the PyCon, right, falls into this? So actually I participated in 2019 and actually see, you know, oh, okay, people are sharing, you know, their ideas, you know, it's like Python. I'm like, okay, I didn't saw, you know, many events before. And maybe this is a place, you know, where I could actually, you know, do it at some point. So it took me, you know, a while, you know, to get my confidence up, you know, to figure out the topic I want to work at and so on. So, yeah, this is this year is the 12th PyCon, even though they actually started at 2009. But, you know, it's quite interesting to see, you know, how to what the event evolved, even, you know, from me looking, you know, from 2019, you know. So, yeah, a bit pushing myself, you know, out of comfort zone, you know, and like basically thinking of a topic and the name for it. Let's see how it's going to go. But if you remember, you know, I mentioned a lot of like a couple libraries, you know, before. So some of them were actually, you know, I quite intended, you know, to do them before, but I see it as a good opportunity, you know, to combine them. So now why I'm talking about combining them is, I mentioned Pydantic, right? So Samuel Colvin is the creator of Pydantic, and that's one of the connections, you know, what I mentioned before to the PyCon. So Samuel is gonna give a keynote. So I'm gonna be extending my ears out and listening to what he's gonna what he has to say, you know, about you know, in general, you know, about Pydantic, its future, you know. Maybe he'll express, you know, twists and turns, you know, while he was rewriting it in Rust and whatnot, you know. So that's going to be an interesting thing. But for all of the further, you know, things what I would like to cover, you know, in upcoming PyCon is like I'm going to try to wrap it, you know, in like in data journey story. Right. So let's start, you know, like with the regular things, like, you know, that data has to be created, right? It doesn't start from nowhere, right? It doesn't appear from thin air. It's either, you know, some third party tooling, you know, it's like ads information, whatnot, but actually, you know, someone has to create them. We have databases, right? But data there doesn't appear automatically. So we have, you know, some data producers, right? Now, who's on the other end, you know, are data consumers, right? And what happens in the middle? So in the middle, we have, you know, very nice and neat, you know, data pipelines, right? So what happens in those pipelines, you know, it's like data engineering magic. So let's start, you know, with one of my, you know, like I mentioned, two topics or like two tools which drove me, you know, to very interesting places, you know, and like I did run some deep dives on them. So on one, I'm going to talk, right? Another one is like, I'm very, very keenly, you know, waiting for this workshop. So So there's going to be a workshop, and it's called, you know, the Unlocking the Power of PySpark, a comprehensive workshop. It's going to be, you know, led by Carsten Fromhold, and going to be interesting, you know, how much it has evolved, you know, at least from when I was using it, and where it is now, you know, how many of more capabilities it's allowing you to do performance tweaking, you know, and so on. Like, and in general, you know, why I like Spark, you know, is that it allows, you know, you can choose data frame API, you can choose SQL, you know, it's it has a lot of, you know, different APIs in general, language wise, right? You can write in Python, you can write in Scala, you know, you can write in Java, and so on. Very similarly, like to the next library, which is going to have like a talk. So Polars, right? Polars creator Richie Wink is going to give a talk, you know, which is named Polars, Done the Fast, Now the Scale. Why the talk name got me intrigued, and all of the similarities, you know, in Polars and Spark, I have a feeling, you know, that there are plans in the future, you know, to run it not on single node, you know, but move it more like distributed computing. So gonna be interesting, you know, what Richie is actually gonna talk about, but I have a feeling, you know, that there might be, you know, a fiercer battle, you know, on the Spark end, right? If you compare, you know, with other data frame like APIs, right? YX, Dask, Modin, you know, that are, you know, already available in Python, you know, so performance-wise, Polars beat them, and, you know, Spark before, you know, with them, didn't have much, you know, like troubles, right? It was by far superior. Now there's new kid on the block, right? And he just misses, you know, like distributed part. So single node for performs very well. Interesting. What's in the future? You know, how it's gonna, you know, try to beat Spark, you know, at its own game. Yeah, but you know, let's go back, you know, to Polars a bit. You know, it's written on Rust and it's using Arrow, right? We have Pandas, right? So what will happen to Pandas then, right? And everyone now, you know, from JavaScript, you know, like to the same Rust, right, can use Arrow, right? It's a superb library, you know, for basically, you know, accessing, you know, files and, you know, even doing, you know, some quick manipulations if you need. Spark uses it under the hood in some cases, you know, when converting from Pandas, right? So it allows very, very neat, you know, options for anyone then, you know, to access the same files, you know, in fast manner, right? Lazy evolution as well. So gonna be interesting what Pandas has to say, you know, for all of this, you know, having that much skin in the game, you know, being the, in some cases, you know, de facto standard, you know, data community, you know, if you have to do something, let's try Pandas, right? So there's going to be a talk, which is called Pandas 2.0 and the Arrow Revolution. It's going to be like the presenter is going to be Mark Garcia, and Mark is a Pandas core developer. So I'm very, very interested, you know, where Pandas in general, you know, all this fuss, you know, going to stand. What are the plans there, you know, and how are they going to try and keep, you know, at the top where they are now? So, you know, we talked about the pipelines, you know, like, or like the pipelines in this case, you know, some Spark code, you know, like Polars code, whatever, right? You have, you know, your Python files somewhere, you have to execute them, right? So we can do cron jobs, you know, but if you have the more dependencies and other things, what you have to do, right? You have to, you know, create DAGs. So talking about DAGs, right? Apache Airflow is one of the, I would say, the most mature at this point, you know, from community standpoint of view, and by the market share, I guess they have. But with some of the players on the orchestrator side, you know, making more noise, some people are starting to ask questions, you know, is actually Apache Airflow, you know, the go-to orchestrator if you're starting, you know, your data journey. So in my eyes, you know, like the two biggest, you know, voices, you know, of this, or like, you know, the people who are comparing, you know, different orchestrators, they're comparing, you know, Airflow, Dexter, and the new kid, like the very, very fresh kid on the block, Mage AI. So let's start with Dexter. So Dexter basically, you know, glows, you know, like their terms, you know, like, oh, data assets, you know, software defined assets, you know, and like how you know, Airflow treats everything as a task and we're treating everything as an asset, you know, a bit of different, you know, terms, you know, and capabilities. So to compare, you know, so the first release, you know, of Dexter was in 2018, you know, like if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in August. And the V1, you know, is actually launched, you know, last year in August, right? So 2022. If we would look, you know, at Mage AI, like super fresh guy in town, like super, super fresh player, you know, in town. So the company in general, like, you know, was established, I think, in 2021. And they did the first release, you know, in 2022, January. Actually, you know, when I check their release page, you know, it's super nice, you know, to see that they're coming up with funny names, or like, you know, some to their releases. So they started with some lunar, you know, kind of namings, and then you can see, you know, like, oh, this release is now the 90s show, you know, and I think the latest one that I saw, you know, when I'm recording, you know, this was Super Mario Bros. So, you know, they're trying, you know, on that end as well to be funny, you know, and witty. And both Dexter and Mage, you know, they're presenting themselves, you know, as like we're trying to do what Airflow isn't doing, right? So I'm gonna try and answer, you know, this question, you know, is it actually the end of Apache Airflow? So tune in, you know, to my speech, you know, to see, you know, if you have to be worried, you know, of your Apache Airflow instance, you know, be or the big migration, you know. But anyway, I digress here, you know, like I'm a bit too much of my shameless plugging, you know, but let's go, you know, with our data story, right? So we have, you know, so our data pipelines, you know, running, you know, they're orchestrated, you know, data's coming into our like data lake, data warehouse, you know, hopefully not a data swamp, or just in general, you know, some random place where everyone dumps everything, you know, and they later on see that, you know, just storage bill is just increasing, but we don't have value. So the natural next step, you know, in general is to create some, or like the easiest application, or like the most common maybe one is like, you know, to create some machine learning model, which would actually do some predictions, right? And it will drive your business decisioning, you know, in the right way. So currently, you know, there's a lot of buzz, you know, on the large language models, you know, like ChatGPT, you know, GPT-4, you know, and so on. And it has been, you know, for a quite a while. But the thing is, you know, if you're new, or, you know, you want to like break in into, you know, your first data science job, you know, you have to know some things, you know, you have to have some information about it, you know. So let's talk about, you know, getting your first data scientist job, right? Because data scientists are actually the people, you know, who are doing, you know, the modeling, you know, validations, exploratory analysis, you know, business case understanding, and a lot of other things, you know. And in some cases, you know, like juggling, you know, like data engineering part, data analyst part, you know, on their day-to-day job, right? So, but, you know, let's say, you know, you want to do purely, you know, data scientist job. In my LinkedIn feed, you know, I noticed, you know, a trend, you know, that people, you know, said like, okay, if you want to become a data scientist, you know, like build your portfolio, right? Create, you know, how, like just do it, you know, on GitHub, you know, showcase, you know, what you're doing, how you're doing, and so on. And it kind of, you know, resonated with me as well, but from a different angle, right? When I'm looking at the applicants, right, if I have an open position, right, if they have a GitHub page, I always open it, check, you know, if they're actually, you know, doing some of the coding, you know, like, you know, pushing some code, you know, to GitHub on their own. If it's not only, you know, some forked, you know, repositories, you know, like and just, you know, nothing, you know, just forked it and that's it, right? So from the code they push to Git, right? You can already, you know, see how they're thinking and whatnot, their code quality and these kind of things. So similarly, you know, I think, you know, that will help too for data scientists, you know, to show, you know, how they're creating things. But actually, I'm not a data scientist, you know, I have no clue actually, you know, how a good portfolio looks of a data scientist, right? So one of the things why I actually will try to tune in, you know, to Carolina Grizzunia talk, which is named How to Build a Data Science Portfolio That Will Make Recruiters Swipe Right, is just to get a bigger understanding, you know, for me, in majority of the cases, as a data specialist, you know, what to look for, right? What maybe in other disciplines, you know, they're focused on different things. And maybe I want to position myself, you know, more to that. Well, in some cases, you know, like even if I'm a hiring manager, and like what to look out for, you know, and Candy's portfolio. So I'm going to be an interesting, you know, exploratory talk, at least for my end, right? So now let's continue our story, right? You got your job, right? You're actually, you know, doing, you know, some modeling. But the thing is that, you know, what you do, you know, you're actually running your code, you know, usually locally, right? What to do if it runs slowly and, you know, you want to maybe improve the performance of it, right? Maybe, you know, occasionally it throws out, you know, some out of memory exceptions, you know, and some other things, you know, what to do and how to, you know, troubleshoot, you know, where it's bottlenecking, actually. So one of the options is actually do some memory profiling. So the topic is going to be covered by, I'm not going to butcher the name because I have no idea how to pronounce it. But the talk's name is going to be Driving Down the Memory Lane, Profiling Your Data Science Work. So from my end, you know, like I'm usually, you know, the guy, you know, who's not doing the memory profiling because my work is a bit different kind. But actually, you know, I notice, you know, that sometimes, you know, checking where you have, you know, the biggest memory, like how to say now, like where's the biggest part of the memory is clogged, right? Maybe you can, you know, do some speeding up and it will allow you to do that. So gonna be interesting, you know, maybe tips and tricks I can transfer, you know, to my own skill set. So, you know, second part is done, right? We got the job, right? We created, you know, some models, you know, we made them efficient. Now what's left, right, is to push it to production. Right. In order to push it to production, right, we have to deploy it somewhere and we have to make it available, you know, via API, right? And then we have to, of course, monitor, you know, if we don't have any issues, you know, response rates and, you know, these kind of things. Can we do that in Python? Of course we can. You know, there are a bazillion, you know, web development frameworks, you know, like, you know, we can build a lot of APIs and quite efficient ones. So we can, if you are like me, you know, interested on that end as well, right, being an all-rounder, you know, data person, you can listen in on Monica Venchko's KTA talk, which is named actually ML Model Serving and Monitoring with Fast API. So I'm going to shoot two birds with one stone. So I'm going to understand, I guess, a bit more, you know, about Fast API and a bit more, you know, how to push ML models, you know, to production and monitor them. So yeah, you know, everything is in production, you know, quite good, you know, but in general, you know, when we think about, you know, the whole, you know, operational part, right? We need, you know, processes, we need, you know, like actually, you know, good ways of working, you know, tooling, and a lot of other things, right? When you think about it, right? So the thing is, you know, that actually I see ML ops in a similar way, you know, becoming a big thing in a similar way, like, you know, DevOps came to life, right? Supposed to, you know, make a developer's life easier. So in this case, you know, it's like machine learning engineers your life easier. So if you want to familiarize yourself, you know, with MLOps, check out Aurimas Griciūnas talk, which is named MLOps Fundamentals, or What Every Machine Learning Engineer Should Know. The thing is, what I see, you know, if you're a data scientist, most likely you want to hear that too. Because always interesting, you know, to know more, you know, outside of your, you know, kind of comfort zone, because it will give you more value, you know, later on. So yeah, it looks like, you know, I just covered suggested 7 or 8 kind of talks, you know, to listen in, but actually there's going to be a lot more. I think 50 plus talks, you know, on different other topics. But I did, you know, did my choice, you know, basically based on topic itself, right? If it's related to data, yeah, I'm most likely going to be there. So check out PyCon.lt. Check out, you know, exist like planned talks, you know, where they're going to happen and so on. If you see me, you know, in the PyCon, you know, don't be shy. I really want to see, you know, and talk with different people and to understand their, you know, ideas, you know, maybe, you know, exchange, you know, some ideas or approaches, you know, along the way. Yeah, I guess if you're going to be there, you know, see you then. If not, and you're listening, you know, to my podcast, Uncle Data, see you in the next Uncle Data podcast episodes.